You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 574, recorded on Election Day, November 6th, 2018. Harnessing Technology. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. On the show today, we talk about harnessing the power of technology before it harnesses you. A little presentation I gave at the Men of His Word Conference a couple weeks ago in Rochester, Minnesota. Sally and I both talk about some image editing applications that you might be interested in, a lot of community feedback, and so much more. Stay tuned. We're back at it again, and I'm with Sally Draper for another episode of Wells Tech. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome, Martin. How about you? Got some snow up there?
What's that word you speak? Nope. Today's election day, though, so went out to vote, and it was a little rainy, but that didn't hold the countdown. I think I was number 800, which is really unusual. If I vote mid-morning, it's usually way down there. So at least from my brief anecdotal observations, looks like counts are up.
Record turnout.
That does to everything when we examine the polls tomorrow morning. So
first Tuesday after the first Monday. It happens every year, but this is a big one, so it'll be interesting.
It is. Yep. But we have a podcast to do, and it's episode 574, and we teased it a little bit last week. From time to time, both you and I do presentations, and we take that opportunity to share what we had prepared for our audiences. And I mentioned last week that I was privileged and honored to ask to speak at the Men of His Word Conference. Men of His Word is a group of individuals, been around for a number of years now. It's a men's conference, and they hold, I don't know if they only hold two conferences. I'm only aware of two conferences. They may hold more than that, but they held one in Oshkosh in the spring, and they just held one in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and they held one in Rochester, Minnesota in the fall to catch those folks in Minnesota. And I was asked to present at both of those, same topic, harnessing the power of technology before it harnesses you. And thought I would share just a couple things from that conversation with them. And a great group of guys. I was able to spend an hour with them and talking about some things that everybody really has to watch out for, but also has the opportunity to use to share the gospel. So we'll put a link to the presentation in the show notes. One of the things that I started the discussion on was, well, there's a good side and a bad side, obviously, to technology. And when we talk about harnessing technology, you can kind of think of that as a verb, something that you harness, something that you have control over, something that you can make use of to produce some kind of good thing, some kind of energy. That's the good harnessing. But harnessing can also be an adjective, harnessing technology, where you are kind of the object of kind of caught in what technology can do, and it somewhat controls you and yokes you or binds you. And we talked a little bit about that as well. One question that I threw out at the beginning of the conversation, the dialogue, which generated a lot of discussion, was I asked him to list three reasons why Jesus might like social media. And then I also asked him to, in the same conversation, three reasons why Satan might like social media. And a lot of different great responses, but you can kind of think about that in your own head. But there are, you know, definitely things about technology that that God has put into our hands for good, and certainly Satan takes advantage of some of those same things as well. And the neat thing about that is it applies almost to everything that we have, that there are tools that God has given us, whether they be technology or not, that all can be used in His service. But obviously the danger is Satan takes advantage of those as well.
Yeah, obviously, kind of ties to the old Adam, new Adam that's a part of all of us. As as believers, we still have those daily struggles with the sins of this world, of our own sinful nature, and certainly things from the devil as well. And so I can see where social media falls right in line with that and
for sure.
uses of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One example that I used throughout, kind of woven throughout the entire presentation and conversation, was the example of Peter, who for all the world looked like a dynamo, you know, had, you know, a lot of passion, never did anything less than 100%, super faithful. But at very inopportune times, he crumbled, you know, and fell victim to Satan's temptations as well, as we think about the courtyard when Jesus was on trial, and just the effect that that had on Peter. And we kind of have some of those same issues. And one thing that I kind of framed our conversation around was three different contexts in which we live. And Peter had the same ones. He had a personal context. He had a family context and a worldly context. And let me explain a little bit about the personal context. That is kind of the things that you can do all by yourself that allow you to kind of overcome the bad that might come into your life through the temptations of Satan. And I talk about two guiding principles there. One was develop healthy spiritual routines. And we've talked about that in the past, way back when we reviewed the book, What's Best Next, and the author, and we're going to return to that at the end of the show for a little bit, Matt Perman. He really kind of talked up the importance of routines, and especially in the area of productivity, but I kind of mapped it to the area of spiritual growth, where if you want to develop a healthy spiritual relationship, you need to kind of plant it into your life at very routine times. So do you have a time where you pray? Do you have a time where you have a devotion? Do you have times where you journal? Those kinds of things, if they're left to the whenever I have time or wherever I can fit them in, sometimes they disappear. And time and life and kind of our own sinful nature kind of trumps those and finds other things to do. But if they're kind of built into a routine, and I talked a little bit in the presentation about my commute, my morning routine, where I get up a little bit earlier than I used to and have some Bible study time. And then when I'm in the car, I play the daily devotion and through the Bible readings from wells.net and journaling time. And there's just kind of baked into a part of your day. And your day doesn't feel quite right if you haven't done those things. And that's maybe it's a little law motivation, but it really helps me. And I know it helps a lot of people to kind of bake those things into a routine. Just as, you know, this is what I do. This is the time of day that I do those things.
Good stuff. Yeah. I definitely think that the routine nature of things, it shifts from being law motivation to being gospel joy, actually. You know,
right. You
maybe
look forward
you start
to it.
With it as a routine, but it becomes something that you miss when you mm-hmm. don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other part of that, the guiding principle number two in this personal context where it's kind of just you, is in that routine, you need to find some good resources. And for me, I already mentioned some of the ones that I use through the Bible readings that wells.net provides, because I can play that in the car, and the daily devotion. I talked a good time about YouVersion, and we've talked about that on the show before. And one reason I really like that is all of the additional blessings that a digital Bible brings to the table. Now, there's obviously there's a lot, there's a warm spot in everybody's heart for the for that paper Bible that they grew up with. But it does have some limitations when you're doing Bible study and those kinds of things, because you know, a digital Bible really allows you to do searches. You can compare translations. You can see what other people have written. You can do highlighting and easily come back to that. The sharing piece of that is really neat, and that kind of drips over into the other contexts of family and world. But if you found a neat Bible verse that you want to share with somebody, you know, a tool like YouVersion makes that really easy to do. There's a share button. Or we've talked about this recently too, where you can just plant a verse on an image, your own image, or images that are built into the application and post those to social media. Just a great way to kind of expand or broaden what you found to be important in your life to perhaps something very important for somebody else.
Yeah, just in case people aren't familiar, YouVersion is the people behind it, but you can actually find that Bible at Bible.com or with a right. mobile app if you search for Bible and look for the YouVersion maker or whatever. That's where you can find mm-hmm. those.
Yep. YouVersion also provides reading plans. And then I also mm-hmm. talked about the Time of Grace reading plans as well. They've got those actually baked into YouVersion or Bible.com. Mm-hmm. And then one last resource that I mentioned, which I think is kind of a hidden gem, Sally, for from Synod resources, is Worship Helps. Just a weekly here are the readings for this coming Sunday. If you follow the pericope or the normal readings for a given Sunday, has the Old Testament reading, the epistle reading, the gospel reading, and then sometimes some supplemental readings with a question or two and some explanation. It kind of gets you warmed up and prepared for Sunday morning or whenever you go to church and hear these readings, where it's not the first time now that you've heard them. You read them earlier in the week and maybe even you know, plumbed a little bit of the depths of those passages, and you get more out of it that way.
Yeah, I'm kind of naive about that. But when I go to church on Sunday, I'm like, man, this seems really familiar, you know, because I studied it earlier in the week. But yeah, it always kind of surprises me too, that I'm feeling real comfortable with the readings and they're having a lot of meaning to me.
Yep. And those are available in the Wells app. Those are available on wells.net. I think you can also get them emailed to you. So it's kind of a no-brainer to kind of build that into your routine as well. Then we talked a little bit about the family context, which is a little bit broader, where we're talking about relationships and how technology can strengthen those relationships with your spouse, with your kids, with your parents. A couple guiding principles: connect through thoughtful technology, I called it. The ability to kind of think of those people around you when you're using your technology. So it's not just about you consuming it, but ways that you can communicate with others through instant messaging and text messaging and social media. And in fact, during the session there, I had all the guys who had spouses text their wives that they loved them. And some of them, they'll think, well, what's wrong with him? It was kind of humorous, but you know, just a little thoughtful emoji or picture, or hey, I'm thinking of you. We're talking about our relationships, and you know, there's lots of little thoughtful ways that you know, especially men may not think of, because that's maybe not built into them, but it means a lot in a relationship. And just staying connected with your kids. Hey, I prayed about you today, and you know, hope you're having a great day. Those kinds of things. So, and the hope, obviously, when you do that with your kids, is that they would reciprocate and they would kind of think, you know, that this is kind of a cool relationship. There's a blessing here that I want to enjoy and stay connected with your family that way. Just a lot of different opportunities through social media and technology in general to stay connected with family.
Good stuff. I like that.
Another guiding principle was seek out accountability. And obviously there are different addictions that everybody is susceptible to on the internet. And one way to kind of fend that off is through accountability. There are different softwares that allow you to kind of have an accountability partner where it automatically tracks your web activity or your media, your social media usage, and sends a report to a partner. Accountability partner can be a spouse, can be a friend, those kinds of things. Those tools are all out there. And in the presentation, there's a link to a great article from communicatejesus.com on accountability software comparisons, you know, what they cost, how they work, how secure they are, those kinds of things are all in there. And then finally talked about the world context, and that's everybody's responsibility to be a gospel sharer. And the theme of the conference was get out of the boat, you know, and the reference there again to Peter. And that was guiding principle one, get out of the boat. I think there is a lot of maybe trepidation about using social media by some men. You know, a lot of men say, hey, I'm not on Facebook or I don't get into that stuff. And there are compelling reasons to consider doing that, if for nothing else, to maybe reach people that you wouldn't normally be able to reach. And that was one of the intrigues about, you know, a tool like Facebook. Right from the beginning, is I could reach out and connect or reconnect with friends or old high school classmates that I never would have seen or heard from again, and another opportunity for me to share what was important to me and my faith. And that was, you know, I thought that was a fairly interesting conversation we had about, you know, guys who never really thought about it that way. They were just kind of happy in their own little world. And there were opportunities for gospel sharers if they would just simply think about some of these technologies in that kind of light.
Yeah, I think, I'm sorry, jumping in there.
Go ahead. That, go ahead.
We oftentimes think about using technology maybe in a professional sense to connect with our tribe, right, and that kind of thing. But I really commend people who are just willing to be out there. I think we haven't heard from him in quite a while because I know he's in a new call and very busy, but Pastor Rob Gunther is a great example of that. I'm Facebook friends with him, and he's just kind of keeping it real. Family things and things that we're all dealing with while the pastor's family is doing the same kind of things, and it's neat to see people comfortable enough to connect with him and comment and things like that. And I think that's just a neat way to make yourself available, to let your light shine.
Yeah. One example I used is right there in the conference. I took a picture of the group and made some kind of comment about what we were doing and why it was important and why this is important to me. And these guys felt it was important enough to come to this conference. And that's a testimony. That's a witness about, you know, I felt strongly enough to share that. And that was a great example for them to say, hey, if I'm living my life as a Christian, that's a witness. You know, it's letting my light shine.
And I'm guessing guiding you tweeted principle, that picture?
Go ahead.
You tweeted that picture?
Yep.
Or?
No, Facebook. Posted
on
Facebook.
You Facebooked it. Cool. Okay.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And then the last principle was pay attention. And that is another kind of really important tenet when you're on social media, is you have an opportunity to be an encourager or maybe even sometimes a peacemaker. So there are people that are hurting out there. You've got opportunities for encouragement, to show love and concern and build up a prayer list. And then sometimes you see conflict and you have the ability to be that peacemaker, step in and share a word of peace or share God's words about living the way he wants us to live. So all those were, I think, very well received, and, you know, just simple things. There's not a lot of them. I kind of try and keep things simple in these conversations so that they've got something they can take home. And so it was a real blessing to me, too, to have that conversation with them.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for sharing, Martin. And we'll look forward to the next time you're presenting somewhere to learn from you. But, yeah, good context that you gave us to think about.
And we'll put the whole presentation it's a PowerPoint presentation. We'll put it in the show notes so you can grab it if you like it. All right, Sally, let's move along to our Wells Now segment.
Yes, and we want to remind people that there's a brand new interactive faith Bible study beginning on November 7th. So we're recording November 6th. Probably by the time the podcast gets out, it'll be November 7th, and it'll be starting that very evening. We have done these interactive faith Bible studies several times in the past, and we typically target them for Wednesday evenings and offer the same Bible study at two different times. So those will be happening at 6 and 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, November 7th, and then again on the 14th and 28th. So what you're going to find in this Bible study is the topic, To the Ends of the Earth, Beginning in Your Own Backyard. So it's a very outreach-oriented Bible study, and it is led by our brand new administrator of evangelism, Pastor Eric Recker. And we actually have a little video that we're going to include on the show notes. So if you haven't met Pastor Recker yet, we'll give you a little introduction to Pastor Recker and the topics he'll be covering there. Really focused on helping you not to be afraid to share the good news of Jesus Christ with the people around you in your everyday settings. So you don't have to go to Africa or Mexico or Hong Kong or wherever. You can share the gospel with the people right around you, and he's going to help you and give you the words to say. So tune in, Interactive Faith Bible Study. You can watch it individually, or you can gather around the stream and have some kind of projection perhaps and watch it as a group. And there's always times during the Bible study where they pause for you to answer some questions and discuss them there in your group setting. So good stuff.
Yep. Pastor Recker will be actually presenting, if you're actually interested, at 6 o'clock to a live audience at St. John's Lannan in, it's right off, is it Lannan Road? And I forget what the cross street is there, but
in the
if
Milwaukee
you are interested,
area.
Take, yes, it's in the Milwaukee area. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in actually attending in person, you are invited to go to St. John's Lannan at 6 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday.
That's pretty cool. 7th,
it'll actually be 7th, 14th, 20th, and 28th. So
that's something different. I don't think you guys have done it in front of a live audience before. Or maybe you have.
Let's see. I'm trying to think back. I think there was one done at MLC, that was in front of a live audience. I don't remember who did it at this point. I think it was maybe Pastor Wessel, I want to say. I could be wrong. But and there was maybe one other time. But it's always a little bit nicer when you're doing it in front of a live audience.
Cool.
As well, so.
Very good.
Very cool. All right, so let's move on to our picks of the week.
And you know, Martin, 574 shows means it's sometimes hard to come up with a pick of the week. We've been doing this for a long time.
I was having a hard time this week, too. I don't know what it was, but my mind was on other things.
And so when I'm in that situation, when the mind map or the show notes are blank, when there's 15 minutes to go before recording time, I stop and think, what have I used this week? What is something that's been helpful to me this week? And when I thought about that, I thought about all the photos I've been working with, because we're putting together a really amazing website for the Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership Summit. And we have photos of all the different presenters, and I'm talking lots of people because we have a huge lineup of presenters for the conference. And when you're dealing with lots and lots and lots and lots of photos, sometimes it's nice to be able to batch edit them. And by that, I mean, in this case, I wanted to standardize them on the same width of the photos so that I had some consistency in the photos that were being posted to the website. But other times it might be that you just want to convert them all to the same format or overlay a watermark on your photos for something, and you don't want to have to open up each individual photo and do that work. And I have a favorite tool. I've talked about it before on the podcast. I'm guessing people might know what I'm going to say, but it's called Snagit. It's from a company called TechSmith, and it's an image, I would say it's a screen capture tool. Is at its heart, it's made for taking pictures of things on your screen and turning them into an image. But it's so much more than that for me. It's basically my go-to image editor for any type of imagery. And it's especially my favorite tool when it comes to needing to batch edit about 85 presenters' photos, because they have a batch conversion wizard built into Snagit. I found a great article that I'll include in the show notes from groovypost.com. I'd never been to groovypost.com. They have a really good walkthrough of the steps involved in the batch editing process. And, you know, it just may be that this is helpful to someone out there who's got, who deals with photos a lot. Maybe you're in a school setting and you're responsible for the yearbook staff at your school or whatever it may be. And, I just think the batch editing capabilities have saved me many, many hours of work on many occasions. So I thought it was worth mentioning on today's show.
Very nice. That is an, I never thought of Snagit in that respect. I didn't know it could do that. That's a great tip because, you know, I've always used Snagit for, like you say, you know, screen captures and, you know, doing markups and those kinds of things. But I guess it would make sense that it can manipulate anything, and the way you've described it, that's a great time saver.
Very
that's
powerful, huge. Definitely.
So good, and not all that expensive. There's educational pricing, I know, and you can get it for pretty reasonable cost. Mm-hmm. I went through the exact same process, Sal. We were probably doing this at about the same time. I said, I don't think I've made a pick this week.
Dear.
So 15 minutes before the show. And normally it's I do it like on the weekend or whatever ahead of time. But you know, I struggled this week, and then I thought, well, what have I been using a lot? And you had asked me for a picture for the conference next year. I hadn't given you a picture yet, and I thought, oh, I've got one, but I wanted to do a little editing on it. It had a little background I wanted to pull out of it. And I didn't use Snagit to edit the picture. I used another application that I've used for other things called Affinity Photo for iPad. Affinity Photo is kind of a Photoshop competitor. They have a desktop version as well. But they also have an iPad version, which is kind of nice because I do a lot of editing of photos right on the iPad. It just is nice to be able to touch them and have them in your lap versus sitting at a computer screen. And Affinity Photo has been around a while. In fact, in 2017, it was voted the app of the year for the iPad. So it's got high accolades, and basically it does everything that Photoshop does, or, you know, kind of a typical image editor. You can do retouching. It has layers. Works with the Apple Pencil. You can do editing of raw photos that come out of your camera. There is drag and drop and just kind of all kinds of filters you can use. It accounts for lens correction of DSLR cameras, noise reduction, retouching, all that stuff. It has, you know, all kinds of brushes, different kinds of effects. I can even edit PSD files, which are the native files for Photoshop. So you could actually take a Photoshop file in or export one that could be edited by somebody else in Photoshop. Does HDR, panoramas, all that kind of good stuff. All the stuff that you'd think a good photo editor would do. And one of the neat things about it is for Photoshop, you would be paying, I mean, if you got one of their subscriptions, I think you could get a subscription for $10 a month that would give you the desktop version. And they don't really even have an iPad version, although that's supposed to be coming next year. But for Affinity Photo, it's only $19.99, period. You know, so a one-time fee. So none of this subscription stuff. So for $20, you really have a very usable iPad-friendly, touch-friendly tool for any kind of imaging. So, you know, it was really no issue for me to take a background out. You can take all kinds of things out of your photo. So if you've got, you know, a person in the background that shouldn't be there, or electrical lines running across the top, or a tree that you want removed, or whatever, blemishes, dust, whatever, makes it real easy to do that. So if you're into that kind of stuff and want to do any kind of retouching beyond what's maybe in your software that came with your camera or whatever, Affinity Photo is a really nice tool. So I'm using the iPad version, again, $19.99, by a company called Serif. So I'll have a link in the show notes for that. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm just curious how you get your photos onto your iPad. So are these photos that you've taken with your iPad, or do you use a syncing tool, or
Yep, both. You can, anything that, since I have an iPhone, anything that I take with the iPhone will wind up on the iPad through iCloud. But then you, it also, you can also bring in different things from different cloud services too. So if you've got your photos in Dropbox or OneDrive or Google, even Google Photos, it'll pull them down into the software on the iPad.
Very so, nice.
And if you have if you're taking them on a DSLR, you take your little SD card out. You have, do have to buy a dongle, but with I forget what they call this dongle, but basically it plugs into your iPad with the Lightning port, and then you plug your SD card into that, and then it'll automatically import them in. So
nice.
Different ways to do it, but. It's pretty seamless, but really a nice interface to use with the iPad for photo editing, for cropping, and all that good stuff. So
sounds great.
All right, so that's Affinity Photo. Let's move on to our ministry resource, and I already teased this a little bit in my discussion of the presentation for the Men of His Word Conference. What's best next? Thought, hey, why don't we talk about this again? It's been a couple years now since I think, Sally, you and I did this review, but a book by Matt Perman, How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. The book is available in digital or in paper form, but there's also a whole website. If you go to whatsbestnext.com, there's all kinds of resources there as well. And some book extras. Everything in the book is there for free, actually, which is kind of nice. There are all kinds of templates and things that he would recommend for getting unstuck, so to speak, getting your productivity game on, and just kind of all kinds of stuff that are available there that even if you don't have the book might be useful. Weekly planning checklist, daily workflows, all kinds of good stuff there. So I thought I'd give a shout out to this book again, What's Best Next. It's the difference between this and kind of your normal productivity book is Matt really brings in kind of the Christian's perspective on productivity. Why are you doing this? And he goes back to, you know, the two great commandments, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And how does that map to a Christian prioritizes his day and his life? Just an excellent book. And the online resources are also good. So take a look at that. What's Best Next is our ministry resource.
Good, good. Yeah, that is one I should go back and reread. It's that kind of book. It's worth revisiting.
It is. Yep. Let's move on to our community feedback. Quite a bit this week.
Yeah, thankful for our Wells Tech community. And everyone who's listening, you're automatically a member, and we welcome your feedback as well. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But first up, I want to share something that I came across. I tagged it on Digo for the Wells Tech group there. And it's from Computer World. It was an article that came out recently titled, A Time-Saving Typing Tool That Works Anywhere in Chrome, and basically features something called Text Blaze, a new Chrome extension that you can get for free in the Chrome Web Store. And what it'll do is expand your text. So you can teach it tricks, and especially things that you type very often, like say your email address or other repetitive type things. And with just a few keystrokes instead of the full-on typing exercise each time, you can just have it fill in that information that you've saved in the text expander software. And what's cool about this is it works on Chromebooks, so you can use it in that kind of setting, especially in our classrooms. Many teachers are working on Chromebooks these days and things, and the author just gushes over the amount of time that it saves and things. I know we've talked about other text expanders in the past, but this one looks really friendly specifically for Chrome. And so if you're looking for that kind of tool, or maybe it's time that you try out that kind of tool, maybe this is the one for you.
Yeah, this tool looks great because more and more a lot of the stuff we're doing is purely in a browser. Mm-hmm. So this would be a perfect tool for that, rather than Text Expander is the one that I use, but that's a built-in application that runs in the background on your computer, this would essentially do the same thing, especially if you do a lot of your work in a browser tab.
Yeah, definitely. So check out the article and give it a try. Then I just went over and perused a couple of our favorite groups, Martin. We often talk about Wells Google Schools in the Google Plus community, but there's also a brand new one, Tech Tools for Wells Teachers, which is over on Facebook. So if you would like to join either of these groups, you just check out the links in our show notes and we'll point you in the right direction. Just apply to join and someone will let you in. That's how easy it is. So a couple of things that were mentioned on Tech Tools for Wells Teachers. One was related to the Midwest Google Summit, which is happening right now. I believe it's in Wisconsin Dells. I'm not 100% sure of that. But they have a hashtag, MWGS, and someone pointed out that if you just follow that hashtag on Twitter, you can learn a whole lot, even if you aren't there in person. And I did a little perusing of the hashtag just for a few minutes and learned some cool stuff. I found the link to Google Drawing templates, like a whole slew of templates that you can use in the classroom that are Google Drawing templates. I also found a link in a presentation about Google Data Studio. And one thing that's cool is that people often take a snapshot of the presenter's slide where they have a link to their resources. So like I said, if you aren't there, you can just glean from that slide link that's in the photo and get to all the resources associated with the presentation they're seeing. So in this case, there was a tiny URL on the screen, and I found out a presentation on Google Data Studio that is something I hadn't heard of, but it's kind of a competitor to Microsoft Power BI. It's data visualizations and things. They linked to a video called Report Like a Boss. So maybe this would be something cool to look into in some of the more advanced math classes being taught, getting your data, your students' hands on data and helping them to create data visualizations and things. Pretty cool stuff. And then one more that I thought was interesting, just in a quick look at the Twitter feed. The more you share, the more you learn from Steve Wick. He linked to his website with a link bit.ly/wickedpd for professional development. So a little play on his last name. And he has a page with all the resources from his presentations at the Midwest Google Summit, and he actually did three different presentations. I don't know if I have his page open. Yeah, here it is. Google's Applied Digital Skills, Exploring Digital Literacy, HyperDocs in the four C's in Learner-Centered Classrooms, and then Using Digital Resources to Empower and Unleash Student Voice. All three of those very interesting topics, and he's got a lot of resources out there related to those, as that's what he was presenting on. It actually says fall 2019. I think we're still in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, but he's a little, he's shifted into a new dimension, but his resources are out there for this time zone anyway. One more mention from Tech Tools for Wells Teachers. It was an article, I want to say, that Rachel came across, Rachel Feld, and shared. It's called A Simple Guide to Free Images, Copyright, and Creative Commons for Students and Teachers. And this is just an excellent article. I was really excited to peruse all the different content that they included here, including some great visual kind of organization tools where she looks at different free image sources. She mentioned several that we talk about often, Pixabay, Unsplash, Pexels, and a few others that are more classroom-centric, Photos for Class, and Pix for Learning. And she has a really great grid. I actually pinned it out on the Wells Tech board on Pinterest as well, a free image overview where she categorizes each of them and what age categories they're for, whether it includes photos, clip art or vectors, videos, whether you have to sign up for an account or not, and whether it has advertising. So a really great reference if you're looking for image sources for the classroom or just for your church website. You can use these images for all different purposes. So check out this article and what she has to say about the different sites that she reviews. switching gears over to Wells Google Schools, a couple of things that were shared there. Drew Willems shared a link to a Google for Education technical conference. So this would be for those geeky folks who administer the Google suite in their schools. It's a one-day conference being held in at the Glacier Canyon Conference Center at the Wilderness in Wisconsin Dells. The date is December 10th. The cost is $150. And the morning will have 3 hours and cover topics including single sign-on, Chromebook best practices, and workflow. And then in the afternoon, there's 45-minute afternoon sessions. Admin console best practices, Chromebook enrollment tools, lots of interesting things being discussed there for those that are fortunate enough to administer Google Apps domains. So check that out if that fits you. And then finally, someone asked a question about viewing a student's browser history, and could that be done from the Google admin console, assuming they're talking about on a Chromebook under your domain. And the answer was no. Google doesn't make that available from the admin console. You can do the old-fashioned thing and have the student log in and look at their browser history manually. Someone mentioned also that they use Securely Auditor, and there's a free version of that. We'll have a link in the show notes, and that tool does it as well, but you have to have that set up in advance in order to make use of it. So anyway, a couple of great tips from those two great communities.
Awesome. Sally, there is a very easy way for all of our listeners to contribute to community feedback, and that is by going to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and you can make a comment there on any of the shows. Just click the comment button and go for it there. Or you can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or find us on social media, and all those are listed on our show notes page as well, from Pinterest to Facebook to Twitter to Digo. Those are all available, and we would love to hear from you. If you've got technology that you found to be useful in your ministry or day-to-day life, or ideas that you'd maybe like us to consider, or maybe interviews that you'd like us to get on the show, we'd love to hear from you. So take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. Finally, we have a video of the week, and this kind of ties into my Men of His Word conference presentation. One thing I talked about with the guys is one of those addictions that can be tough to break with technology is just how much do you use technology? Let's say screen time. How many times a day do you pick up your phone? How much screen time do you have on an average day? And Apple, in their recent iOS or their operating system launch, has included a new tool called Screen Time. And our video this week is how to use that tool, Screen Time, which allows you to both analyze and take a look at how you spent your time, how many times you used your phone or your tablet, how many minutes or hours you spent on Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or any of those things. And then also allows you to set limits. So if you wanted to say, I only want to be on social media for a half an hour a day, you could actually set that, and then your phone would say, half hour's up. You can't do that anymore. This is also something that parents can use on their children's devices if they have them. Just a good, quick tutorial on how to start using screen time.
It sure does raise awareness. Like, I haven't even worked on setting it up or anything, but I have the new operating system. And so, I don't know when it was, Saturday morning or something, I woke up to a message on my screen that says, your screen time usage was lower than last week by such and such percent. Right. And click here to see all the graphs and all this. And I was just like blown away by the amount of time that I'd spent on my favorite game lately and that kind of thing. So interesting to see. And so I'll have to tune into this video and learn more, because it's showing up and giving me some nudges.
Right. Mm-hmm. Information could be valuable to you. We are going to do this again for episode 575 next week. And we're going to have an interview with one of the presenters for next year's Education, Technology, and Leadership Summit. And that's Matt Rudot, who is going to talk to us about his experiences with MailChimp and sending encouraging automated emails within his congregation. So you're going to want to tune in for that and a whole lot more.
Martin, maybe you know John Rudot a little better than me. Perhaps his middle name is Matt, but it is John Rudot that we're going to be talking to.
What did I say?
You said
did
Matt.
I say Matt? Really?
Yeah.
I'm looking right at it.
I'm telling you, it's written right there.
Sorry, John. And I've known John for quite a long time. So John Rudot is going to be joining us. So, yes. All right. So join us for that and much more. And we'll try and get everybody's name right as well. Thanks so much. We will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.